Hey, y'all. Welcome to this week's episode of Unfit to Print. I'm your host, Amber Athey. I'm the Washington editor for The Spectator and a senior Blankley fellow with the Steamboat Institute. Before we get started, please subscribe to the show on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Rumble. And if you'd like to become a premium subscriber, you can head on over to amberathey.supercast.com. First of all, let me wish you guys a happy belated 4th of July. I love Independence Day in the great United States of America. It's probably my second favorite holiday after Christmas. I go crazy on 4th of July. And this year, I actually left Washington, D.C. and spent my Independence Day down in the free state of Florida. And I would never say that Florida is a perfect place. I certainly had my issues with it. First of all, no offense to my Florida listeners and viewers, but you all are horrible drivers. And I'm from Maryland, so that is saying a lot. It is mind-blowing how often you will see these turtle-paced Florida drivers park in the left lane. They won't move over for anybody. Half of them don't use their turn signals when they do. They cut across four lanes of traffic trying to catch an exit, slam on their brakes for no apparent reason. The drivers were absolutely infuriating, but I guess I can attribute that to the fact that you guys do have a large elderly population. So maybe there's just a bunch of old people who need their licenses revoked and nobody's really had the gall to tell them that they shouldn't be driving yet. Also, the mosquitoes are insane. I think that you guys seriously have like supercharged mosquitoes. I still am unable to sleep at night sometimes because of how itchy every part of my ankles and feet are because of these mosquitoes, and it is absolutely insane. So if anyone has any tips for how to soothe Florida mosquito bites, please drop them in the comments below because I am suffering over here. And the humidity is a little much too, but overall, I had a great time in Florida. Everyone is super patriotic down there. I was in the Naples area, and we played golf at this public golf course. And I've never seen anything like this before. I thought it was amazing. On the ninth hole, they actually replaced the pin flag with an American flag. And they even had this little holder off to the side of the green so that when you took the flag pin out of the hole, you didn't have to place the American flag on the ground. And then all the bartenders and cart girls and the people who were cleaning the carts were all wearing American flag themed clothing. It was amazing. We went out to dinner and the restaurants all had 4th of July specials. All of the diners were wearing American themed clothing. The beach was absolutely packed for people going to watch fireworks. All around, really great experience. Really enjoyed it. Beautiful scenery. Florida's very lush. Apparently you guys get thunderstorms every afternoon, but nobody seems to know how long they happen for because all of the locals assured us time and time again that these were daily 15-minute thunderstorms, and yet sometimes it would rain for 3 hours and sometimes not at all, so it was kind of a crapshoot. But what didn't happen to me in Florida was really interesting because I was under the impression that if I was in Florida and I said the word gay or transgender or gender identity or gender fluid or maybe even non-binary, that the DeSantis military would come and round me up and throw me in the gulag. And yet I said gay a couple of times throughout the weekend and I'm still a free woman. So somebody has been feeding me misinformation. I also had some books with me and I wasn't told that I had to burn any of them. But California Governor Gavin Newsom insists that Florida is not the free state we've all been led to believe that it is. He actually released a new commercial on Fox News on Independence Day in Florida, complaining about the state's apparent lack of freedom and insisting that his state of California is actually the true place for liberty. Listen to this.
It's Independence Day, so let's talk about what's going on in America. Freedom, it's under attack in your state. Your Republican leaders, they're banning books, making it harder to vote, restricting speech in classrooms, even criminalizing women and doctors. I urge all of you living in Florida to join the fight or join us in California, where we still believe in freedom, freedom of speech, freedom to choose, freedom from hate, and the freedom to love. Don't let them take your freedom.
paid for by Newsom for California Governor 2022.
All right, well, let's run through some of the allegations in this ad. First, Gavin Newsom claims that Florida is banning books. No, that's obviously not true. You can still read whatever books you want. They merely state that you shouldn't be teaching sexually inappropriate topics to kindergartners, first graders, second graders, and third graders, which I think is a pretty reasonable proposition that anyone who's not a pedophile would agree with. Then he says that Florida is restricting speech, presumably referring to the so-called Don't Say Gay law, which is actually the Parental Rights in Education bill. Again, just says that you can't teach inappropriate topics to children. He also claims that Florida is making it harder to vote. I actually think it should be harder to vote. Frankly, the fact that anyone can receive a ballot in the mail despite not even having registered to vote, probably not even having the right ballot sent to them, and then some person can come by and ballot harvest it and drop them all off is crazy. Obviously, we should have voter security, voter integrity. That is the only way to have a system where we can trust that the outcomes are not fraudulent. So Florida, like other states, have enacted election security measures to ensure that people are who they say they are when they go to vote, that they're American citizens, that they live in the right precinct, and that they're eligible to vote. And then finally, he claims that Florida is criminalizing women and doctors. No, they're criminalizing killing your unborn baby, as it should be. Now, meanwhile, in California, the so-called state of real freedom, as Gavin Newsom claims, kept kids out of school for 2 years, forced people to lock down and not work. They allow homeless vagrants to run the streets. You basically have to walk over a pile of poop if you live in San Francisco just to get to the grocery store. And when you do finally get to the grocery store, you're probably going to be in the middle of a smash and grab by criminals who will then not be prosecuted by the liberal DAs. So sounds really free to me, right? There is one guy who said it better than I could, Trey Radel, who I was actually lucky enough to fill in for recently on 92.5 Fox News Radio down in Florida, released his own version of this ad, calling out the ridiculous delusion that Gavin Newsom is living under if he truly believes that California is a state for freedom. Go ahead and watch this new version of the commercial.
It's Independence Day, so let's talk about what's going on in America. Freedom is under attack in your state. Dictator Ron DeSantis incredibly lets you walk around without masks. That tyrant allows your kids to go to school during the pandemic, year two or four, or who the hell knows. I urge you living in Florida to join the fight. Or join us in California, where we'll take the money you earn and give it to people who don't work. Visit San Francisco, where you can walk through human feces. If you're lucky, you might step on a syringe. Check out Los Angeles, where gas is so expensive, your kids only need to skip a meal or two or ten to afford it. California, where freedom means lockdowns for you, while I go to the places you can't afford. Don't let them take your freedom. Come to California, where we'll take it, along with your money.
Of course, liberals like Gavin Newsom are livid that Florida is thriving and people are leaving their states in droves to go to various other states that actually allow people their freedom, don't indoctrinate their children, and don't allow people to kill their unborn children. All seems pretty sane, but the left cannot argue with Florida's results, so they make up lies about Florida and Governor Ron DeSantis. One of the biggest lies, which we talked about on a previous episode, was the idea that Florida was fudging its coronavirus numbers. This was all led by Rebecca Jones, who was an alleged data scientist, but actually just someone who helped organize the dashboard containing the data on Florida's coronavirus response. Rebecca Jones made a whistleblower claim that Florida was manipulating the death and case counts and had inappropriately removed certain segments of data from its dashboard. A Florida inspector general investigated Rebecca Jones's claims and found out that they were bogus. There was no evidence that Florida had ever altered any of its numbers on the dashboard, and the only reason that they had removed some information for a short period of time, which was then restored back to the dashboard, was because they wanted to make sure that private health data from residents had not made its way into the dashboard. As soon as they had cleared the information to make sure that everyone's personal health info was protected, the data was restored. The newest claim against Florida is an allegation that Governor DeSantis just signed a bill requiring universities and university students to register their political beliefs with the state. They claim that Governor Ron DeSantis has essentially created a database full of underage university students and adults as well of their political views that he can then use to crack down on them. That couldn't be further from the truth, yet you hear it in mainstream media stories from people like author Stephen King, from actor Ron Perlman, and a whole host of really idiotic libs. Claire McCaskill, former senator, asked, "Is this America, really? What kind of autocratic, freedom-squashing government overreach is this?" The headline from Salon.com that she linked to claims DeSantis signs bill requiring Florida students, professors to register political views with state. And if you just type in DeSantis political register on Twitter, you will see that tons of people had this totally incorrect statement. This is such a blatant lie that even PolitiFact came out and gave this a false rating. Not even mostly false, just flat out false. They rated the claim from a viral post on Facebook that said Governor Ron DeSantis, quote, just signed legislation requiring students, faculty, and staff at Florida's public universities and colleges to register their political views with the state. PolitiFact makes quite clear that this is not the case. What the bill actually does is it requires public universities to perform an annual assessment of intellectual freedom and viewpoint diversity at public colleges and universities. It's not that students would ever have to say which political party they identified with or what their political leanings actually were. They would only be asked to answer questions indicating whether or not they felt that their university was allowing intellectual diversity to thrive, and if they felt comfortable sharing their political views, whatever they may be, on campus. I think that this is a pretty good bill considering the way that colleges and the students within them have cracked down on conservative thought across the country. When I was in school, I actually had a fellow student drop a class because she was so horrified that she had to talk respectfully with a fellow conservative in the class. And then I had teachers who would badmouth conservatives in front of the class, even though there were obviously conservatives taking the course from them, and who had to stay silent for fear that their grades would suffer if they spoke out. And I had faced harassment from my fellow peers in my dorm room floor because they would deface my political signs and spread nasty rumors about me because they found out that I was a conservative. I think it's a great idea to make sure that these universities are fostering a place where students can hear all different viewpoints. Because right now, we're basically graduating a bunch of woke Gen Zers, previously millennials, who then go out into the corporate world or into the media and other major areas of the so-called real world and are able to exercise their influence there. They use the same bullying tactics that they did on campus to wrestle management into submission, and it leads us to having a less free society. So bravo to Ron DeSantis. Obviously, he's not requiring people to register their political views. There's no gulag in Florida, whether you say gay or you're just identifying as a Democrat. This is all about making sure that colleges are living up to the idea of academic freedom, which I think is a great thing. So once again, Florida is winning. The liberals are mad. They make up lies, and the lies get called out. It's the circle of life. Yeah. Twitter might be purchased by Elon Musk and all of that nonsense. But for right now, they are still actively censoring people for the most ridiculous reasons. The latest victims are Jordan Peterson and Dave Rubin. Jordan Peterson was suspended or locked out of his account because he tweeted, quote, "Remember when pride was a sin? And Ellen Page just had her breasts removed by a criminal physician." Twitter told Jordan Peterson that he had violated their rules against hateful conduct, saying that you may not promote violence against, threaten, or harass other people on the basis of race, ethnicity, national origin, and hold on, guys, this list is really long. Sexual orientation, gender, gender identity, don't worry, it keeps going, religious affiliation, age, disability, or serious disease. Wow, I am out of breath just reading that. But those are apparently all of the things that you're not allowed to talk about on Twitter. They told Jordan Peterson that all he had to do was just delete the tweet and he could come back on the platform. It's all you got to do, guys. You just censor yourself and then you're allowed to access your Twitter account again. Isn't that great? Well, Jordan Peterson told them to go fuck themselves. He said, "I'd rather die than delete truthful tweet for cancel creeps." And he wrote for the Daily Wire that he did not believe the tweet was hateful, which obviously it wasn't. And the only thing that he could see in the tweet that was considered harassment was the fact that he so-called dead-named Ellen Page. And if you guys aren't familiar with what dead-naming is, when a transgender person decides to try to transition into another gender or identifies as another gender, sometimes they change their name to be more in line with that new gender. Because nothing comports better with the left's idea of breaking down gender norms than saying that there are girl names and boy names. So anyway, Ellen Page decided when she changed her gender, which you can't do scientifically, but let's go along with it. Ellen Page changed her gender, chopped off her breasts, and said that she was going to start living as a male. She changed her name to Elliot Page. Well, because she changed her name to Elliot Page, you're no longer allowed to use the name Ellen Page to reference her, because that's considered dead naming. In normal life, when a non-transgender person changes their name, there's usually a bit of grace involved because we've known that person as one name for their entire life. So when they change their name, particularly when they're a public figure or somebody famous, it can sometimes take people a minute to catch on to what the new name is. And then when you add in the layer of them changing their name because they want to identify as a different gender, and now you're suddenly referring to a woman as a man's name, that adds a little extra layer of confusion for most people. A lot of us saw the movie Juno, where Ellen Page was, in fact, a pregnant woman. So the fact that Ellen Page now has a flat, supposedly male chest and goes by Elliot, that can be a little hard for some people to grasp, and therefore, we will sometimes refer to that person as their so-called dead name so as to avoid that level of confusion. According to Twitter, however, and the transgender lobby, that is hateful. You cannot refer to someone as the name that they have been referred to for 30 plus years of their life when they suddenly decide they would like to be called a new name. So, Jordan Peterson was convicted of dead naming Ellen Page and was therefore locked out of his Twitter account. Dave Rubin decided that he was going to defend Jordan Peterson, and his crime was merely tweeting that he posted a screenshot of Jordan Peterson's tweet and noted that there was insanity continuing at Twitter. He said, "At Jordan Peterson has been suspended for this tweet about Ellen Page. He just told me he will never delete the tweet." And sure enough, Dave Rubin was also suspended from Twitter, presumably also for using the name Ellen Page. Now, Twitter, apparently in the aftermath of all of this, allowed Ellen Page to trend on their platform because so many people were talking about Jordan Peterson and Dave Rubin's suspension. This was also a problem. Even though the trends are created by algorithms based usually solely on what people are talking about, Twitter does have the power to go in and manually change trends that they don't like. This happens a lot. And in this case, apparently Twitter took 45 whole minutes to notice that Ellen Page was trending. And that was a problem for the woke left. BuzzFeed News wrote an entire article complaining about the fact that Twitter, quote, allowed Elliot Page's dead name to trend in spite of its hateful conduct policy. Ah! The actor's dead name was listed under the site's trending tab for at least 45 minutes. The goddamn privilege we have in this society to think that someone's so-called dead name trending on Twitter for 45 minutes is a freaking international crisis. This stuff is crazy. But BuzzFeed reached out to Twitter and rectified the situation. Don't you worry, guys. Ellen Page is no longer suffering because Twitter apologized for allowing it to trend once BuzzFeed reached out to them. The dead name no longer appeared to be trending, according to BuzzFeed. Twitter spokesperson Trenton Kennedy confirmed the site had removed it as a trending topic and said that allowing it to trend was a mistake. The term you referenced should not have been allowed to appear in trends, and it has since been removed and prohibited from appearing in trends, Kennedy said. Our teams are constantly evaluating our internal processes for mitigating this from happening. Then Elliot Page appeared as a trending topic, and the tweets were then largely supporting Ellen Page and defending her. So Twitter actually removed the real trending topic and replaced it with one that they found more morally satisfying. That seems like a huge problem for a platform that is supposed to allow people to speak their minds, but we know that that's not what Twitter really is. Twitter is just another place for liberal groupthink to reign and for conservatives to be silenced. This is why Elon Musk needs to stop playing around and go ahead and buy this thing so we can finally have freedom of speech on this platform again. But the longer that he drags his feet and starts waffling on the terms of his purchase agreement makes me think that maybe he's not so serious about buying Twitter after all. He seems to be looking for any reason to get out of actually pulling the trigger. And unfortunately, without someone who actually believes in the idea of an open and free platform in charge, then we're going to continue seeing the suspensions like we did of Jordan Peterson and Dave Rubin. Really quick, by the way, before we get into the next topic, I just want to read you guys this tweet from my friend Greg Price. He should totally be suspended for this. The only reason Ellen Page became trans is because being a boring lesbian wasn't enough for her. Damn, Greg. I love it. I can't believe you haven't been suspended yet. Good for you. That is hilarious. We've got a bunch of White House news this week. A few fun little topics for you. This Biden administration, it's going to be hilarious when we look back at it because they're going to do the same thing that they did with the Obama administration. And they're going to say the biggest scandal Biden ever had was his dog biting a staff member because there really were no scandals. It'll be just like the Obama tan suit thing where they claim that the tan suit controversy, which they totally made up, by the way, was an indication that the Obama administration didn't really have any actual scandals or controversies. They're going to do the same thing with the Biden administration. But of course, the Biden administration is like a nonstop factory of scandal. This week, Biden announced that he was going to give the Presidential Medal of Freedom to 17 individuals. And the list includes a couple of names that I found to be a little bit suspect. So you have your normal heroes on here, and then you have Denzel Washington. Obviously, everybody likes Denzel. I don't know anybody who would say a bad thing about him. He's a great actor. But he's also giving the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Simone Biles, who is best known for being a quitter. And I think we live in a pretty backwards society when we are rewarding people for quitting ahead of the biggest competition of their lives. Now, for those of you who maybe aren't as familiar with Simone Biles, she is an Olympic gymnast. She was on the U.S. team and was widely considered the most talented gymnast in the world. Now, ahead of the Tokyo Olympics with the team competition, Simone Biles actually pulled herself out of the running and basically cost her team the gold medal because without her scores, her team ended up winning silver. And Simone Biles claimed that she had to leave the competition because of her mental health. She said that she couldn't take the pressure and that she was afraid that she was going to injure herself. Now, I do understand the sport of gymnastics can be very dangerous. And if she really wasn't in it that day and she felt like she could have hurt herself, that's understandable. But that doesn't mean that we have to herald her as a hero. if a male athlete did this, and this is quite a double standard, I think, in favor of women, which you're not allowed to say because women get no advantages in life ever. If this were a man who had pulled out of competition at the last second and cost his team the number one spot, he would be referred to as having choked. That's what we say about athletes who can't handle the mental pressure. Because part of being an elite athlete is being able to withstand those really tough mental battles that you have with yourself, particularly heading into a particularly tough competition. So the idea that Simone Biles is heralded as some kind of mental health advocate and hero for dropping out of competition, I think is so backwards. And now she's actually getting a Presidential Medal of Freedom for this. And I have to ask, where is the Presidential Medal of Freedom for her teammates? They went out there after their number one superstar teammate participated in the first event, dropped out of the competition. They had to bring in alternates, and they still managed to bring home the silver medal. I think that is far more deserving of applause and celebration than someone who had to leave the competition. Again, if she had to make that decision for her own health, then that's perfectly acceptable. It's fine. But I hate the idea that we're supposed to act like she has done some amazing feat when I think it would have been far more impressive if she had been able to work through whatever mental health issue that she was having and compete in the competition and do a good job. That's a part of what being an elite athlete means. And speaking of athletes who are getting the Presidential Medal of Freedom, Joe Biden has also decided to award Megan Rapinoe, who is a member of the U.S. Women's National Team. Megan Rapinoe, if you guys don't know, is the women's soccer player with the purple hair and is very loudmouthed and is always complaining about how the women don't get paid as much as the men. And as we've seen time and time again through the facts of this so-called gender pay discrimination case, it's not quite as clear cut as the women on the women's national soccer team make it seem. Really what happened is, first of all, the women don't bring in nearly as much revenue as the men's team does. They don't charge as much as tickets. They don't sell as many jerseys. They just don't bring in as much money, right? But also, the women's team chose a different pay structure than the men's team. The women's team opted to be paid a guaranteed base salary. So, naturally, women in general tend to prefer less risk. We are a risk-averse creature. That's just how it is. Compared to men, we tend to be more risk-averse. So, it makes sense that the women's national team would choose a structure of payment that would allow them to get a guaranteed salary. The men chose a different structure. They chose a reward-based structure, meaning they have to actually win games and tournaments in order to get paid. Even though they win less often than the women do, because their payment allows them to get more for each win as opposed to the smaller guaranteed salary that the women get, overall, they get paid a lot more. So the combination of the different payment structures, as well as the fact that the women don't bring in as much revenue, does mean that the women's team overall gets paid a lot less than the men. It's not a case of gender discrimination, but just the way that these different scenarios are structured and the reality of profit sharing. Yet Megan Rapinoe claims that this is all because they're women and they're being discriminated against. So Joe Biden is awarding her with a medal for lying to you. That's really nice. It's no wonder that staffers are leaving the White House in droves. You have Kate Bedingfield being the latest victim to leave the White House. She was the communications director since the beginning of the Biden administration, and she is now leaving. And there was also a mini scandal with her departure. But first of all, let's just point out that the comms team at the Biden White House is in great flux. So Kate Bedingfield left. Simone Sanders left as the spokesperson for the vice president, Kamala Harris. Of course, Jen Psaki recently left for an MSNBC gig. And there's some lower level staffers who have been leaving or complaining about the work environment. But when Kate Bedingfield left, something interesting happened. A Politico reporter by the name of Alex Thompson said that he had the story first. He actually tweeted about it and then gave the White House a chance to comment. But the White House not only didn't respond to his request for comment, they actually did something much worse. They told him that they needed more time to work on a response and then ran to the Wall Street Journal, gave them the story along with a comment from White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain. Now, this is a huge no-no. It's not the White House's job to run interference for a preferred news publication and give someone else's scoop to that publication. That is considered very unethical in the world of communications. And a lot of journalists called them out for doing this, surprisingly, because usually journalists don't want to criticize liberal administrations. But they did say that the way they handled the news of Kate Bedingfield's departure was very inappropriate. And finally, in White House news this week, the White House has reportedly removed some famous Norman Rockwell paintings and replaced them with portraits of none other than the Biden family. These four Norman Rockwell works, according to Politico, were famous White House paintings. They were part of a series called So You Want to See the President, which features various high-profile Americans waiting to meet the president at the White House. They've apparently been on display since 1978 and were moved recently from the lower press hallway to the hallway between upper press and the Roosevelt Room during the George W. Bush administration. But now, under the Biden administration, the Norman Rockwell pieces are apparently being removed and replaced with portraits of Joe Biden. Now, I remember when there were some false stories about Trump removing historic portraits and replacing them with himself and his family in the White House. Everyone was talking about how it was just another symptom of Trump's huge ego and how he was a sociopath who could only ever think about himself. Do I think Trump has an ego? Yeah, sure. But if we're going to say all of that about Trump, about photos, which never even happened, by the way, then certainly Joe Biden removing these famed White House portraits or paintings from Norman Rockwell and replacing them with personal portraits is a huge problem and completely inappropriate. He's taking out historical paintings done by a famed American artist and replacing them with ego shots. How ridiculous. And yet we are supposed to believe that Trump was the egotistical one and Biden is just a humble blue-collar guy from Scranton. This whole administration is a complete joke. I could go on for ages, but that's all I have for you guys this week. Stay tuned for the bonus video coming over the weekend. And as always, please be sure to like this video, subscribe on YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, leave a review, and go check out our premium subscriber tiers at amberathy.supercast.com. I'll see you in our next video and for next week's episode. Great to see you guys.